The Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra turns 100 years old this season, and many of its plans to celebrate have had to be adjusted. A season announcement is expected in a couple of weeks, but in the meantime, I reached out to music director Julian Querti to talk about how he conducted Beethoven's Overture to the Creatures of Prometheus virtually with the musicians of the Symphony Orchestra. The video can be found at the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra's YouTube page and WMUK's Facebook page. Julian, I'm so glad to catch up with you again. This pandemic has changed everything for so many people.
You know, this has been something that the world, everybody in the world, has had to deal with in some shape or form. And for performing artists, for musicians, it has been incredibly difficult. The entire COVID crisis, not only because we make our living by performing music to concert halls full of people, which no longer exists in this world, but also there's a real part of us that needs to perform for people. And it's not only performing in a vacuum, or, you know, performing for a video or performing, you really want to feel a personal connection between yourself as an artist and a listener. And this is something that I know myself and all of the members of the orchestra and all of my musical friends, everybody is absolutely craving this. And everyone is looking for other ways to fulfill this part of themselves.
Along with the chance to lead the Kalamazoo Symphony in the final works of last season, you know, the chance to usher in and helm an entire season celebrating a 100th anniversary that doesn't come along very often, and that was snatched from your expectations.
Oh, it was. It was. You know, as we were just joking earlier, you know, how do you make God laugh? Well, you tell him your plans. And in this case, we had such an amazing and thrilling and unique and special 100th anniversary season prepared, and we were about to release it when we decided that we would hold off on our season release for 1 or 2 weeks, which turned into months, and now we've had to redesign virtually everything. But I've got good news that we are not, as planned, we will not be losing any subscription concerts or any of our concerts. We're just going to be shifting them slightly in the season. And we've got a lot of great music planned for the 100th anniversary. And I'm sure that we'll be able to talk about that in much greater detail as soon as we've actually released it.
Right. We're talking now in mid-July, and there's every expectation that you'll be able to announce the season in August, but we'll have to, you know, put a pin in that for now. I guess hinting is okay, but you know, we really can't endorse any particular plan at the moment. I was thinking of a story you told a few years ago, when you first joined the symphony as a music director, and it spoke to your idea of innovation and flexibility. You told a story about a concert that was held completely in the dark, and no one could see anything; you could only hear. And I've never forgotten that. I think that is a way that you embrace today, and ways to reach people in different ways. And I have a feeling that, you know, your flexibility is really coming into play in this situation too.
Well, you know, I remember back in March, we had our what ended up being our final concert of the season. At the time, we had no idea, but it was a program of Mahler. It was Das Lied, and I remember afterwards, the COVID crisis was mounting, and already in Europe and in Italy, especially, it was becoming full blown. And I knew that we were going to have to try to adjust, and maybe we would have to do something. We had the St. Matthew Passion that was all ready for preparation, and we were about to go into production.
Yeah, hundreds of people preparing that.
Hundreds of people, and I have a feeling that there were many hundreds of people who were preparing to go to it, and everybody, so many people I talked to were so looking forward to that concert, and it's something that I really intend to bring back as soon as we can safely have choruses on stage with us. But at the time, this was early March, I began to think, and I said, well, you know, what if we have to cancel one or two programs? What can we do? And I had at the time what I thought was a very unique and original and daring idea, which was, what if we had the entire orchestra at home record themselves playing their own part to some piece, and then collect all these videos together and put them together and stitch them together into a whole? And so we began talking about this, and we began working towards actually doing something like this. Well, you know, in the meantime, it seems a lot of other orchestras had exactly the same idea, and they were, in fact, even a little bit ahead of us in terms of production. So I don't know if you remember, but going back to about April of this year, one after the other, orchestras began to release these videos of their musicians at home playing for cell phone cameras and putting them together. As I was watching these videos, we were ourselves at the KSO very hard at work recording the parts to what became our first virtual performance, which was the overture to Beethoven's Creatures of Prometheus. And this was an exciting, wonderfully thrilling project, and it's something that a lot of people have been asking me about, and especially there have been a lot of how did you do that questions, which I would be really happy to go into in any sort of detail that you think your listeners might be interested in.
First, I want to tell listeners that they can see the video on YouTube at the Kalamazoo Symphony page. It's also posted on WMUK's Facebook page and the KSO Facebook page. And it's riveting from the opening image to the final chord of this Beethoven overture. And I'm assuming you thought Beethoven appropriate because of the 250th anniversary of his birth.
Of course. I mean, we are right now in the Beethoven year, the 250th anniversary, which is being completely transformed and in some small way scuttled by this epidemic, which I think is also it's kind of ironic in some way, because Beethoven himself, his whole life was plagued by illness, and very often some of his best and most important plans were torn apart because of his illnesses. He was not a well man, and now that his 250th anniversary is plagued by a global illness, it almost seems like the punchline to a joke. So I chose Prometheus. I chose this piece not only because it was a Beethoven year, but also the subject matter I found was a little bit apropos. It's music for a ballet, and it's not the story of Prometheus that we know from the Greek myths. It's actually a retelling. I think it was a French, 18th century retelling, at the time of the Enlightenment. And in this version that Beethoven sets to music, Prometheus creates man and woman out of clay, and then he brings them to life. But he finds that although they're living, they're not yet human. And what will make them human is that they must be shown the different disciplines of art, of science, and of music. And so the entire ballet is about how Prometheus brings to the humans who are not yet living, or not yet human, although they are alive. He brings them art and he brings them music in order to fulfill them and to make them human. So I thought that this was a wonderful story to be telling at our own point in time, where we felt, all of us, in isolation, that although we were living, we were not quite human.
That is so real to me. I have to admit, when cultural activities went away, and some of my own as well, it just sends you into this place of why am I here? What's my purpose actually now? You know what?
Well, exactly. Exactly. As a people, we are more than just surviving. We need to always look for something more and something more important and something deeper. And, you know, for many of us, music fills that space. And this project was, you know, not only was it great from the point of view of myself learning a new medium and starting to play with music in a different way, but also I felt that it really was an important moment for the orchestra, where we realized that we could be more, and we could do more, and we could be different. And it was a wonderful project to work on, and it was actually, it's the first of a series, and there will be more rolling out very shortly. Few small things, and we're going to be gearing up for another much larger project that should be released in September.
I would like to go back to some of the details on this video, which again is available at the Kalamazoo Symphony Facebook. Julian, it is masterfully edited, because I can't, every musician is in time with, we're hearing and seeing a perfect replication of this overture. I don't know how you did that so exactly.
Well, you know, it's funny. First of all, I want to just tell everybody who's listening that what you are hearing on the video is actually all of those individual recordings put together. Some people think or thought that we had just merely taken an existing recording and then kind of, you know, lip synced to it. But that's not the case at all.
Guilty, Julian, that it doesn't look possible if somebody's in their closet and another person's in their kitchen to get a combined sound that sounds that wonderful.
There are secrets and there are tricks. And I can pull back the curtain a little bit and try to walk you through how it's possible. Because at first glance, it seems impossible. What we do as musicians on stage is so much about listening to other people and to reacting, that when you have a musician all on their own with nothing, with no feedback and no context, you know, it's very, very, it's very, very difficult to play, you know, to have two people reading the same music, but to play the same exact thing. So what we do is, or what I did was, I created what's called a click track. A click track is like a metronome. It's just a little, tick that sounds on every beat. And here and there, I put in some other things into the click track. Maybe sometimes I even use my voice to tell people, you know, to hold a note or to cut it off. But the click track, the musicians get the click track as an audio file when they get their music. And when they make their recording, you might not have noticed it on everybody, but in fact, everybody playing in that video has at least one earphone in their ear. And on that earphone, what they're listening to is the click track. So they record themselves, and the click keeps them more or less in time.
So you, unable to use gestures and conduct, can still set the tempos.
Exactly. And now, here's the interesting thing, Kara. As any music student knows, practicing with a metronome is frustrating and it's awful because the metronome doesn't budge. And the metronome stays exactly at the same beat. And it doesn't matter if you're playing something that maybe requires a little bit more time or something that should actually push forward a little bit. So when I make the click track, what I actually do, I start with the score and I start with myself conducting it. So I actually set up the camera on myself first, although you don't see it in the video because I decided not to use it. Maybe I will in future videos, but I set up the camera on myself and I conducted through the score as if I was performing it in a concert. And after I had done that, I took that video onto my computer, and it took a long time, but I basically put a click on every beat that I conducted. And after I did that, I looked at it in one of the programs that I was using, and it turns out that if being a conductor means you have to keep the same tempo, then I'm a pretty terrible conductor because almost every bar was slightly different. Almost every bar had subtle variances. And I think what that really means is that the music itself, it needs to breathe. You need to give it time. You need to give certain moments more time. You need to also push it in certain places. So the click track that I end up sending the musicians is much more like the skeleton of a real performance than it is just a metronome, a simple, boring metronome. Because if you tried to do the same thing just with a metronome and keeping it completely steady, it would sound boring. It would sound dead.
Well, to me, if you compare, say, going out and hearing some club music, for me, after a while, I would say, you know, that constant pulse becomes like a prison of a beat.
Sure.
But if you then get in your car and put on your Mahler, that breathing, that flexibility, the constant adjustments are some of the most beautiful things about playing music, especially classical.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is where our music comes to life. So it was very important when I made the click track that it had this feel to it. And I sent it out, and then little by little, the musicians recorded their parts, and they sent them back to me. And then I descended into this unbelievably complicated labyrinth of technology, which I wasn't afraid of, but it ended up being a lot more complicated than I at first imagined. I had to take everybody's audio, and I separated the audio from the video. So I only took their audio files in, and in fact, I took them in. I took them in nameless. They were just called violin, viola. In some way, I didn't need to know who was playing what. I just needed to have the actual recordings, And what I had to do was, starting from the very beginning, even though we had a click track, I had to adjust and make sure that everybody was interpreting that click the exact same way. And that they were all lining up on the beat. So I put it all together, and then I had to go back over it and make sure that the balances were okay, that you could hear the clarinets, that there was enough bass. And, you know, I spent a long time trying to get the mix sounding as well as it could before I even started to open up the video and to see what I wanted to do with that. It took me a few weeks to get the mix to a place where I liked it. I'm getting a lot faster now. It's much easier, but back then I was also learning how to do this.
You must have experienced your ears getting tired and eventually your eyes getting tired. But what it resulted in is really a video through the eyes of a conductor of what Creatures of Prometheus, the overture, means. You added meaning by choosing balances and choosing who we saw on the screen. It really enhances the music.
Well, I'm so happy that you're able to feel that, because that was definitely on my mind the whole time. I guess, being a conductor, I think of this music differently than a listener would. I think of it structurally. I think of, you know, the formal parts of it. And I think about the expressive side. I think about the ideas, the themes, if you will, that Beethoven uses, and what they mean, and how you can portray them musically. So when I was starting to put the video together, I was in fact using many ideas that you would use if you were composing a piece. For instance, the whole introduction, there's a slow introduction of the Prometheus overture. The whole introduction is a source of tension, is leading up to the release, where suddenly it begins the allegro, and it's very, very fast and exhilarating. And I tried in the filmmaking, I guess you could call it, I tried to create this tension and this sense of direction that can be felt to release as soon as the allegro starts. But also structurally, for instance, in a piece of music like this overture, well, we have something called a recapitulation, which is a point in the piece where you hear again the first part of it. And it's sometimes, it begins usually exactly the same, but then it starts to change a little bit. And so in the video, when we get to the recapitulation, I actually go back and I use some of the exact same visual patterns and visual cues that you saw at the beginning. It's a way to tie it back both visually and also acoustically. And then, of course, there's in almost every great work of that period, but especially of Beethoven's, you have a coda, which is sort of an over heightening it's kind of the top of the top. It's the very end, just before it's finished, and it's where he kind of throws everything at you, and it's thrilling. So I tried to save something special and something that was even more you know, fantastic for the coda section, which I think still kind of explodes from the screen and from the players in the orchestra.
That must have been quite a learning curve, and I'm glad that you're planning on putting the skills to use again in the near future. Are there any pieces or particular ideas that you're fooling around with that you can share?
Yes, we are. In fact, I'm in the middle right now of, we're going to be releasing a series of short canons featuring smaller groups of the orchestra in all sorts of different constellations and configurations. A canon is, you know, just remind everybody, it's a round. A canon is a piece of music that accompanies itself. So the first part starts. It's like row, row, row your boat.
Frère Jacques.
Then Frère Jacques, exactly. And then the second part sings exactly the same thing, but because they've started later, there's a harmony that's built into it. So I found some unbelievably beautiful and even in some cases very complex canons by all sorts of different composers. You know, Mozart and Brahms and Berlioz and Haydn and Schumann, and so I've got all of these videos, and I'm at the moment putting them all together into these short little canon videos, which will start to trickle out very soon. We've already got a few of them ready, but we're waiting until we have enough to start dropping them. And I was also just recently I was asked to produce a full virtual concert to celebrate Canada Day in Peru. So this was presented by the Canadian Embassy in Lima, together with the National Symphony and the National Children's Choir, and I produced a full 45-minute concert program that you can also find online.
I have long had this silly idea that, much like how you become more invested in a sports team when you know the players' names and you know what they do well and their statistics or whatever, I've often thought that, you know, maybe baseball cards of the orchestra members would add some of that team spirit to audiences here. But I think your videos actually accomplished this much better. I mean, when I'm watching and seeing the players, some of whom I know and some of whom I don't, it still gives me that sense of, well, hey, there's Gabe and there's so-and-so. And it adds to my pride and community spirit when I see players from the Kalamazoo Symphony on screen doing the work they do. I think that's an added benefit, even though we can't see them in the concert hall for now.
Well, I think you're going to be really pleasantly surprised with these canon videos because, well, I don't want to give too much away, but let's just say that there's going to be a lot of interesting film work that will show a lot more about these players than just playing their instruments.
Julian, it has been terrific to spend a little time with you on the radio today by phone. Was there anything else we can talk about?
Well, you know, I just wanted to say that it's been so great for me also to speak with you. Many of the listeners probably don't know this, but one of the most wonderful aspects of going in to be interviewed by Kara is that you arrive in the studio and then Kara, you make the most wonderful tea. It's almost like a tea ceremony that you arrive and it's always a slightly different blend and it's presented so perfectly. And that's something that I really, really look forward to. And it's something that I really do miss. Even now, you know, we're speaking together. It's really not the same without being there, without seeing you, and without the wonderful tea.
There will be another time, and that tea will be so, so delicious. I appreciate you talking to me, Julian, and we will catch up again soon.
Good. I look forward to it.